Ethan, let's make a goal for ourselves this year.
What's the goal?
Let's see if we can do a podcast every week for the entire season this year. What do you say?
I think that's a good goal, and I think we can
Do
do it.
you think we can make it all the way through?
I hope we can. I think we can.
Ethan, Biathlon's back, man, and we're back with the podcast. How you been? How's your summer been?
It was good. Nothing too crazy, just enjoying life and sat there waiting for the bathroom season to start.
I know, right? I have this like weird just excitement this year. I'm not sure what it is. I mean, I'm always excited about Biathlon, but there's something about this season that I was just like super excited for the racing to start, and I was definitely getting up at 2:45 mountain time to watch the races. And so I don't know. We'll see how long I can make this last, but I know that I've just been super motivated to watch Bathlon. How about you? Have you been getting up in the middle of the night, or you've been watching the replays?
I have unfortunately been watching the replays for most of them just because it's tough to wake up at 3 in the morning and then go to school all day. But been watching the replays and they've been really exciting races so far, and I'm excited for what this season has to offer.
Absolutely. All right, let's dive right into it. First shot, Nicholas Hartvig, out of nowhere seemingly, wins, or sorry, comes in second place in the first race, shooting 100%. And that was only his 31st World Cup race. That it just like, as someone who's been following biathlon really closely, I know the name Nicholas Hartvig, but I don't think anybody, probably not even himself, had himself on the podium for their first race.
I can't imagine that he, like, obviously, like, the fantasy is to, get on the podium and win races, but I can't tell myself that he seriously thought he was going to be able to make the podium, but it was pretty awesome to see.
Yeah, I mean, he's only 22 years old, and he's had some success on the Junior Cup, including 9 podiums and a, believe it or not, a world championship, junior world championship victory in Oserbly in 2019, where he shot 95% in the individual there. So it seems like the individual is kind of his jam. But you know, his shooting percentage, I mean, last year his shooting percentage on the year was 80%, which was well below the World Cup average, and even on the IBU Cup, it was 80%. So there's nothing, you know, it's kind of funny that his some of his best races are in the individual, considering that's such a shooter's su such a shooter's race. But yeah, I mean, Nicholas Hartvig, he kind of turned some heads at the first race.
Yeah, and it's not like he, it's not like it was windy and everyone else shot poorly. I mean, some people obviously did not have exceptional days on the range, like Tarjei Bo, but he still had a top 20 ski time, which is that's what's most surprising to me. If he can shoot and then keep skiing top 20 ski times all year, I think he's in for a great season.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, he backed it up with a 16th place and a 17th place in the sprint in the pursuit. So, what do you say? Is he going to be, he's currently ranked 6th overall after, you know, 3 individual races. Does he stay in the top 10 for the rest of the season?
I am not so sure about that. I think he's young, like we've said. I think he's obviously going to make some mistakes. And if you look at the names below him, like Ponsaloma, Jacquelin, Fabien Claude, Christensen, Fionn Maillet is 13th. I think there's a lot of names below him that are looking to move up. And I think he's definitely a name to keep your eye on for the next few years to come. But I don't think he's going to finish in the top 10 at the end of the year.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be awesome for him if he were to finish in like 10th to 15th. I mean, that would be such a major win for him. Let's change our qualification here, our criteria here for a minute. Does he finish with the blue bib at the end of the year, being the top U25 athlete? Other blue bib contenders: Philipp Andersen from Norway, Eric Perrault from France, Sebastian Stadler, his teammate from Switzerland, Adam Reynolds, and even Campbell Wright from New Zealand. What do you think?
I think it's going to be between him and Anderson from Norway. I think they're going to kind of have similar seasons where they have their ups and their downs. But I really don't know. That's a really tough question.
Well, Anderson finished sixth in the sprint and 15th in the individual, beating Hartwig in both races. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a tight battle for that U25 bib after, you know, Sebastian Samuelson has now aged out of that category. I think didn't last year, wasn't Ligrid in that category as well. So, I mean, a lot of fresh new names on that U25 list. None of them, I'm going to say none of them are really competing for the overall, at least on the men's side. The women's side is a completely different story. But on the men's side, none of them are really competing for the overall. So that's going to be a really fun battle to sort of watch, you know, sort of like a side story of what's going on this season.
Yeah, but, definitely something to keep your eye on, though. That's for sure.
We got a miss here, and I'm going to chalk that one up to the Swedish men's relay. And I'm extra salty about this because I am playing fantasy pool, or sorry, what is it called? Biathlon pool fantasy this year. Many of you know, I'm going to quick shameless plug here. Many of you know that I have my own pool going on this year, and the winner of that pool wins a Sean Doherty signed race bib. So I'm trying to win my own pool, Ethan. And I thought I had a good team with Sweden, and I guess I didn't dive into the stats too much because not only did they let me down in the race, but after going through the stats, I realized that they have not done very well in relays in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. I know. I like after the first race, they had two in the top five, and then Jasper Nellen was in 14th. I picked them for my fantasy team too for the relay day. I was like, surely they have to pull out a good result and at least, you know, top five. I think anything less than that probably would have been disappointing for them. But if you look at their results and all that stuff and you see that they've only been on the podium twice in the last 11 relays.
Yeah, that's going back 2 years. 2 years they've only been on the podium twice, which when the way I look at it, there's really four teams. I mean, granted, last year, you know, Russia was part of it. But at this very moment, there's really four teams that are head and shoulders above the rest. You have France, Norway, Germany, and Sweden. And the rest of the teams, they have maybe one or two good guys. But for men's relays, there's really four teams that are head and shoulders above the rest. So I picked Sweden thinking, oh, you know, worst case scenario, they come in fourth place. Mm-hmm. And even after Femling had two penalties in standing on the very first leg and they dropped, back down to 14th or something, I still had faith that they were going to move their way up the field because they still had their two best guys to come in Ponsaloma and Sebastian Samuelson. And I just felt that most of the other teams put some of their best guys out first. And, you know, when it all shook out, Sweden was going to move their way back up to at least fourth place. And then Ponsi had a penalty in his leg. And that pretty much closed the door for the comeback. But, you know, I don't know who I'm going to pick next time for my relay teams because, this is a little bit specific to this fantasy game, but Norway is a pretty expensive get. And if you pick Norway, there's no chance you're going to pick. You have any budget left to pick any of the other teams. So I thought Sweden was going to be a good get because I would still have some budget left over for some of the other teams, but man, they let me down. And again, kind of digging through the stats, Femling, he's a terrible shooter in relays. When you compare his relay shooting to his individual, like non-team shooting, he's shooting 15% worse in relays. And I don't know if that's because he thinks he has, you know, the safety net with the spare rounds, or maybe it's the pressure of having the team on your back, but you know, usually he's a pretty good shooter and he just really let me down in that relay. So I don't know. What are you thinking? Who's going to be your relay team for next relay in the fantasy league?
That is a really tough question. Like you said, I think the easiest choice is to take Norway, but then you don't really have any budget left. I think I was surprised with the Czech Republic, not going to lie. They shot well. They only had to use 10 spare rounds, no penalty loops. And maybe that was the key, staying out of the penalty loop and just, you know, shooting well like every other relay. But I think I might have to pick the Czech as kind of a budget selection for the relay team.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Austria.
Go ahead.
I was just say Austria kind of surprised me too, because I kind of looked at their squad and was like, okay, you got Ader, who's getting a little bit older now, still shooting relatively well. Felix Leitner, who I think is going to have a good season this year, but yeah, Komats and Jacob just didn't really excite me. And so the fact that they came in fourth ahead of the Czech, you know, that definitely surprised me. I wasn't really sure who was going to, well, I guess I thought at least at the minimum Sweden was going to come in fourth, but they blew it. But, you know, I guess going from fifth, sixth and seventh, I really, it's a toss up between really every team. Even Canada was in there for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess one more thing I want to say in the relay is, if you told me that the United States was going to finish 30 seconds behind Sweden in the relay, I would have taken that any day of the week. And we were ahead of them for most of the relay up until the last leg.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to like bash on the American relays, but we definitely have some younger athletes that are getting their first World Cup experience and, you know, haven't gotten to be on the big stage yet, who did really well. But the caliber of Sweden should have just blown us out of the water.
You're right.
And I was
You're right.
surprised about that.
You're right. Pretty interesting here. One glimmer of hope for Sweden in that relay. Most athletes, you know, all some of the top ski times from the other legs are like 17 and a half minutes, 17 and a half, 17:40. On the last leg, Sebastian Samuelsson's course time was under 17 minutes. So he skied a full 23 seconds faster than Johannes Tingesbø and like 40 seconds faster than pretty much everyone else in the race. So, yeah, wow. I think if there was one thing to look at that relay and be like, well, okay, we did something right, it was one guy skied super fast. Other than that, I mean, I guess, you know, Jasper Nalin had a fine race. I mean, he's not your top guy, so like you didn't really expect him to win the race for your team, but you know, he did his job. Seb did his job, and geez, the other guys just they hurt, man. I remember those of you who follow me on Twitter know, because I was tweeting about it and there's also this one guy on Twitter who was letting me hear about it, because I posted my predictions and then he just goes, how's that working out for you, right after Femling was in the penalty loop. So
that's dang. Funny.
All right. Better luck next time, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Going on to our next hit here. Speaking of relays, let's totally flip the script here. The women's relay was freaking awesome. Don't you think so?
It was pretty incredible. I was like, I was watching and I was like, honestly, could not believe how close it was the whole time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was like about eight teams that were still in the race at the second exchange. I mean, like that's absolutely insane. There was just all around pretty decent shooting, you know? I don't think there was it wasn't like it was just terrible shooting and that's why there was you know, there was bad racing. It was just, you know, it was just really competitive. Every team, it seems like there's a bunch of teams that have, you know, at least three solid women out there. Mm-hmm. Just double checking the times here. There was, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams within 30 seconds of each other at the second exchange, which is, that's so crazy.
I know, it was so fun to watch, because for, you know, like those second, third legs is kind of where the race kind of sets up and breaks down and you can kind of figure out who's, you know, obviously these teams are probably going to podium, but you just had no idea what was going to happen watching this race. And then, you know, the last leg is where kind of all the like heavy hitters and powerhouses for each of the countries are, like Elvira Oiberg, Denise Hermann, Tandrevold from Norway, Julia Simon, and, you know, so on through the list. And just seeing those names, like knowing that those athletes were going to add to this race being already that exciting, was a great feeling to watch during the women's relay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that last loop between Denise Hermann and Tandrevold, for fighting for second place, because at that point Sweden had kind of pulled away with it. That battle between Herman and Tannervold was great. The prone shooting was literally shot for shot. Like, you could not distinguish between two shooters at that moment because they were shooting at the exact same time and they're hitting the target. Neither of them needed a spare. And then going into the last shooting, Herman had two spare rounds needed. Tannervold needed one. And okay, like, who do you, I mean, we know who won, but leaving that, you know, that last shooting, who do you have your money on for ski speed? Can Tannervold hold off Herman, or is like 10 seconds not enough for Herman, you know?
I feel like Herman definitely has the edge on ski speed over Tannervold, but you know Tannervold's going to give it absolutely everything she has and fight to the line. Even if she gets past, she's going to try to hang on and salvage whatever she can. But I think she needs 15 to 20 seconds over Herman to kind of to keep her spot.
Yeah, I mean, we all know Denise Herman's one of the top skiers. She's not the top skier, but she's one of the top skiers. But Tannervold's one of the top skiers as well. Mm-hmm. And it was, honestly, I'm a little surprised that Herman was able to catch Tannervold, because Tannervold's feisty. She's a fighter on the course, and she has posted really good ski times for the last few years. So if it was anyone else, if it was Anais Chevalier or Lynn Pearson or Mary Ader, if it was anyone else, I would have been like, yeah, that's Herman. But you know, there's only a few people out there that I would have given the edge. That seven, I just looked it up. It's 7 seconds. She had the advantage. Mm-hmm. There's a few people I would have given that 7 second advantage to, and I really thought Tannervold was one of them. But you know, Herman pulled away, and Herman got her, and they ended up winning by what, 2-3 seconds. So, yeah, super exciting there. Real quick, I also just want to give some props to Switzerland. I definitely did not expect them to come in fifth. really good race by them. And honestly, now that I'm looking at their team, Switzerland's not bad. They got three, you know, I would say they got at least two solid athletes in, you know, Lena Hecky Gross and, you know, Elisa Gasparin, maybe. Mm-hmm. Ada Gasparin, not too much different than Elisa. And then you got Amy Baserga, who's the rookie on the team, 22 years old. I think she's going to be a contender in maybe next year or the year after. She's still a little bit young, but you know, at first glance, I was not too excited about Switzerland, but after looking at their team right now, I'm like, wait a second, Switzerland might be a sneaky pick here for, you know, some fantasy relay points.
Yeah. I think none of them kind of like jump out at you as super fast skiers, but they're all going to hit the target and they're all going to, you know, take their time, make sure they hit the target, because that's the most important thing in biathlon. Make sure you hit your targets. And they all, you know, except for Lana Hackey in the last leg, they all used 1, 2, or 0 spare rounds, which is amazing for a relay. I think they have a chance to kind of, you know, stir up the pot with those midfield teams competing for, you know, those top fives and those last podium spots when they pop up.
Yeah. I mean, they handed off at exchange three going into the last leg in fourth place, tied with France. And even with France's 0+0 shooting on the last, Julius Simon did not require a spare round, where, yeah, Lena Hecky required five. They only finished, you know, 18 seconds back of France. Mm-hmm. And France, I think a lot of people had France to be definitely on the podium. Maybe not a winner, because I think Sweden is like sort of stacked right now, the Swedish women. But I think a lot of people had France coming in second place in this race, and Switzerland kind of held their own. So, you know, maybe, who knows? Maybe it's, you know, early season, they started off well, but maybe Switzerland is one to watch. We'll check back in on this one after another relay or so.
Mm-hmm. I got one more thing too to point about this women's relay. Norway finishing third, only 30 seconds behind Sweden. And I say only because they're without Tyrell Ekhoff and Marta Osby Roysland, who are absolute superstars. They could win any race on any given day. I think for Norway to finish third, only 30 seconds back from Sweden without those two, is pretty awesome as well.
Yeah, and I mean, Norway was the best shooting team. They only used three spare rounds, no penalties. The next best, probably Germany, who was just ahead of them with six spare rounds. No, I totally agree. Norway's a young team. Tandervold, I think, has a little bit of pressure on her because suddenly she went from being like the third girl on the team, you know, 25 years old, to now she's only 26 years old and she's the veteran. And I think she even said something in the post-race interview about how the Norwegian media called her like the old one on the team or something. And so she was like, don't call me old. She's like, you can call me experienced, but don't call me old. But I mean, it's funny because Fem Steinvik is 27. She's older than her, but this will be her first real season on the World Cup. Ida Lien is 25. A little bit of experience on the World Cup, and Caroline Noten, also 27. So, you know, Tandervold's still one of the young ones on the team, but a lot of inexperienced athletes, and that just goes to show you the depth that Norway had. I mean, you know, Fem Steinvik and Knoten, they didn't get any experience on the World Cup because those top two spots were shoo-ins for basically one and two the last two seasons. I mean, it was last year, the overall winner was Roysland, and then the year before that was Eckhoff. So that's just a guaranteed, you know, spot you don't get right there. But yeah, you're right. I was very impressed with Norway. And honestly, I think I probably would have picked France to beat Norway going into this race. So really impressive. All right, moving back over to the men's side. Johannes Tingis Bø, speaking of Norwegians, back to his winning ways. Is this going to be the most dominant season in biathlon history? Yes or no?
That's tough, knowing the dominant season he had a few years ago. But it's looking at his stats so far this year. Obviously, there's only been three individual races and then one relay. But he's skiing faster than everyone on the World Cup, more so than he has in previous years. So his ski speed has increased more than anyone else. And what surprises me most is his shooting time has decreased by roughly 2 seconds in both prone and standing.
Really? Wow.
And which is, that surprises me. And in a four shooting race, there's 6 seconds that Johannes Tingis Bø kind of has, you know, freely in his back pocket that, and then he has in previous years. And he can just kind of, you know, whip those out wherever he wants. He can take like two or three more seconds before his first shot and his last standing to make sure he hits the targets. And other than that last leg for Samuelsson in the relay, where he skied faster than everybody, 30 seconds faster than Johannes Tingis Bø, like watching the race, Johannes Tingis Bø did not have to ski very fast for most of his last leg.
Yeah, he was kind of cruising there because he knew he had the win in the bag.
Exactly. But yeah, it's hard not to back Johannes Tingis Bø on having a dominant season again if he's shooting faster and skiing a lot faster than everybody else.
He's skiing absurdly faster than everyone else right now. At the moment, compared to other top 10 athletes, he's minus 2.3%, which, to put that in perspective, Martin Ponsaloma, Emilien Jacquelin, Sebastian Samuelsson, other extremely fast skiers, they're skiing only minus, basically zero. They're basically skiing 0% faster than other top 10 people. And Ligrid is right in there with that. Believe it or not, Johannes Kuhn is in there with that. Tarje Bø, and believe it or not, Jasper Nelin. So if you look at the top 10 skiers, nine of them are basically skiing the same pace, you know, separated by fractions of a percent. And Johannes Tingis Bø is skiing 2% faster than those guys. Now, compared to the median, like everyone in the field, pretty much, he's skiing 7% faster. So who's like a median, you know, how many racers are there? There's 100 racers, the 50th fastest skier out there. Like, that's Emilien Cloud that's not a really good one to base off because we don't have much data on him. But like, you know, the 50th fastest skier out there, David Komats, or let's see, who's another one that people would know here? Simon Ader. Oh, he's dropped off a little bit. Felix Leitner, Jake Brown. That's a perfect one to compare it to. Jake Brown is the 39th fastest skier. Johannes Tingesbo is skiing 7% faster than him, which is like
crazy.
Yeah. Ski speed. Johannes Tingesbo, 26.98. So basically 27 kilometers per hour. And then Jake Brown is skiing 25.7 kilometers per hour. So he's skiing a full 1.3 kilometers an hour faster, times 10K, times 20K, times 12.5K, whatever. Like, that is just so, he's just skiing so absurdly fast right now.
Yeah. And Jake Brown is no slouch on the skis either. In college, he was one of the fastest guys in the country. And I think to this day in America, he's still one of the fastest flat out skiers.
Right now, Sean, his ski time is a little bit faster than Jake's, but I know that many people within USBA would regard Jake as the fastest skier on our team. Mm-hmm. And
I would agree.
Yeah. And Johannes Tingesbo is in a different world.
Yeah. I would be really interested to see if Johannes Tingesbo hopped over to the cross country World Cup.
And I would love to see that.
That would be so cool.
I'll be honest, I haven't been following the Nordic World Cup as intently as as the Biathlon World Cup, but I do know that it seems like the Norwegians are slaughtering everyone on the men's side over there. Close.
It's kind of funny looking at the results.
But anyway, I mean, this can't be sustainable. I think last year we saw, you know, the Swedes started off super strong, mm-hmm. and then they ended up kind of tailing off a little bit. And the Norwegians, actually, they were the ones that started off slow and then came back and peaked for the Olympics. And Johannes mm-hmm. Tingesbo was the, you know, champion of the Olympics, even though everyone kind of thought it was going to be QFM. But, you know, this year, I think it's the French that are starting off a little bit slow. Jacqueline's up there in ski speed. Fabien Cloud's actually having a decent ski speed year. Where the heck is Quentin Fillmaye? That guy is, he's just not a factor right now.
Mm-hmm. It's surprising. I think you mentioned the Olympics last year. I think this year is going to be really interesting because there is no Olympics. Obviously, there's still a World Championships, but the Olympics is such a big defining moment in an athlete's career. And that they're coming off of that this year. So I think whoever prepped really well for the Olympics, I think is going to start the season really well. Like we're seeing with Johannes Tingesbo and Ligrid and Sebastian Samuelsson right out of the bat. But like you mentioned before, Samuelsson and the Swedes started really hot last year and kind of tapered off towards the end. I wonder if France and mainly Fillmaye are going to kind of pick things up as the season goes and slowly keep ticking off podiums and wins and eventually find himself competing with Johannes Tingesbo and Ligrid for the overall.
Yeah. I for the sake of biathlon, I would love to see Fillmaye kind of find his groove. Personally, mm-hmm. I'm more of a Jacqueline fan myself when it comes to French guys. So any of these guys, even Fabien Cloud, I mean, I've known him since I was a junior. Mm-hmm. I would love to see him start doing well. I mean, he's doing great, but I'd love to see him be fighting for the overall. I mean, you just look at the first three races. Yeah, Boak 12th in the individual, but he bounces right back with first and first, and then Ligrid second and second. And in that pursuit, it really seemed like it was just the Bo and Ligrid show. No one else even had a chance, not even against Ligrid. Like, I mean, Bo was seemingly untouchable, but even Ligrid was like kind of safe. Like, even if he messed up on the range, which he did at the end, he was still mm-hmm. safe because they had such a big lead and everyone else ended up messing up as well. So,
yeah. And looking at the overall right now, Ligrid is already some 40, 35 ish points ahead of third place, Roman Reese. And then Johannes Ingesbo is another 20 points ahead of that. Mm-hmm. Do you think anyone has a chance of catching them or getting close to them after they already have like a pretty good size lead?
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. The new points system is definitely going to shake things up a little bit, I think. Mm-hmm. Basically, they awarded more points to people who are finishing in the top six. So it used to be that if you were in first place, you'd get 60 points, and then it was like 55, and then kind of down the line. Now, if you come in first place, you get 90 points. And then once you get down to seventh place, it's the same as it was last year. So it's, I think that the system is really rewarding people who are finishing in the, you know, the top six, more specifically on the podium. So that being said, like one good trimester, and we've totally seen this, and okay, I'll finish what I'm saying. One good trimester and you could totally turn your season around. I mean, if you go get 90 points, you know, in four or five straight races, like boom, you're going to be skyrocketing up the points list. And second, no points at world championships this year. So if Quentin Fillmaye is peaking for world champs, or anyone else is focusing on world champs, which I know some athletes have said they are, no points there. So you can basically, I don't want to say you can write them off, because if you're a good athlete, you're going to get good points and you're going to have good races. Right. But to win the overall, we know that you have to be consistent. And that's been proven in the past. Fillmaye proved it last year. Bo proved it the year before, and has been proving it. So you have to be consistent, and just a few bad races and you could really mess up your chances for the overall. I just hope that Fillmaye, if he is looking for the overall again to defend his title, I just hope that you know, this isn't going to hurt him, you know, first week of the season, and he already has, you know, just literally three races, 10th, 14th, and 15th. And, you know, maybe you can be afforded one or two bad races outside of the top 10 if you're going for the overall, but everything else has to be in the top 10. And now with this new point system, it has to be in the top six at the minimum. Mm-hmm.
It'll be definitely something to watch out for. I think Fillmaye is going to have to start getting on the podium soon and as fast as he can, because I don't see Bowen Lygrid falling too far behind the podium, if even off the podium.
Here's what I think. I think Fillmaye gets a, we'll say he gets a podium, maybe a third place in Hochfilzen. Mm-hmm. Rest of his races, I'm going to say, are going to be 4th through 10th. And then he's going to come alive at Le Grand Bernal, because the dude's a showman. And when he's the center of attention in his home country, I bet that's when he comes alive.
That's a very good point. That French World Cup is going to be one to watch. If you're going to watch a World Cup weekend from the first trimester, watch that one.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, let's move over to the women's overall now. I mean, holy smokes. pick. I'm going to give you 20 names. You tell me which one's going to win, okay? No, but seriously though, it's so jam-packed. The sprint race, like, I think there's 25 places separated by 1 minute. Anyone in that 1 minute, anyone between first place and 25th place could have won the race. Mm-hmm. Who's your leading favorite right now?
It has to be Elvira Oiberg with how fast she's skiing. I mean, she might not excel in the individual where, you know, if she misses three or four, like, she's probably not going to win. But any other race, it's like the Johannes Ingesbo effect. She has a chance with one miss in a sprint. She can still win with 2 to 3 misses in a mass start. It's just so hard to write her off. I pick Elvira Oiberg to win the overall. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm picking Hannah Oiberg simply because I think she has just a tiny bit more experience. And like we just mentioned, you have to be consistent to win the overall. And I think her tiny little bit more of experience is going to be the kicker that gets her over that hump that, you know, mm-hmm. keeps her ahead of Elvira. But I agree. Having that, like, that, it's like secret weapon almost, that mm-hmm. you can just mow down anyone on the ski course if you need to. you're down by 15 seconds in the last lap. You have 2K to ski faster than someone, and you could just be like, I'm doing it. That's, I mean, it's hard to beat someone who can do that, but I'm not sold on Elvira's shooting percentage right now. I think that's going to be a big hindrance, and I don't think she's going to be like terrible. I don't think she's going to be like, you know, coming in 10th to 20th place every race, but I think it's going to be one of those things where she's consistently coming in like, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th place maybe. And Hannah is going to be getting one more hit than her and coming in 3rd place, coming in 4th place, maybe winning. Don't get me wrong, I think Elvira will win plenty of races this year, but I think it's going to be close, and I think I think Hannah has the edge because she has the experience, and that's my take.
That's a good take. I think what makes the women's field so exciting is there are those that ski super fast, but then those that shoot really well, like Lisa Vitozzi, whatever she did this summer, if you can figure out what she did to turn her shooting around, do exactly that, because it's honestly a miracle watching her shoot this year compared to last year.
It really is. Her relay performance, like, I mean, I think she's always been just a god at relays, but seeing her go from like 4th place on leg number 2 in the second shooting, she went from like 4th place to 1st place. All eyes were on the heavy hitting favorites, and out of nowhere, Lisa Vitozzi skis away with the lead. Like, and yeah, I agree. Her shooting percentage, for whatever reason, she's got it right now. Well, let's see if it can last. I'm a little nervous. I feel like I'm walking on eggshells when talking about Lisa Vitozzi shooting, because she's proven in the past that she can do it. I mean, she's had incredible results. She came in 2nd overall, what, 3 years ago? Remember that year when Doro and Lisa were battling it out all season? Her shooting percentage that season was like 87%, 88%. Like, she couldn't miss. And then suddenly just went down 80%, well below World Cup average, 78%. And then last year, 71% season percentage. 71%. The World Cup standard is 85%, and you're shooting 15% less than that. Doesn't matter how fast you're skiing. And I mean, she wasn't skiing that absurdly fast. So, like, honestly, she was lucky that she even had a spot in the World Cup last year with those performances. But yeah, like, you're right. This season, she has, oh, I guess she has now. But going into the last race, she hadn't missed a standing shot yet. She did miss. So she's at 96% standing, but 92% prone, making her at 94%, which is like, I mean, I don't think she's going to finish there, but if she can finish close to 90%, that would put her up there as probably one of the best shooters. Probably one of the best shooters for an entire season in a long time. I think the only one coming to my top of my head is like, maybe Vanessa Voigt last year shot like 92% on the season, which is like absurd.
Yeah. Like, one interesting thing that I learned this weekend, what's the name of the American coach that went to coach in Finland and is now coaching the Italian team?
Oh, Joni Kaukonen.
Yeah. I noticed that he's now the shooting coach for the Italians. Mm-hmm. And Lisa Vitozzi shooting much better than she has in previous years. Mm-hmm. And Yone was kind of the one that started turning the switch for the Americans when Susan and Claire started to, you know, really take off in their careers because they started hitting more targets.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lowell Bailey won his gold medal at World Champs because he shot much better than everybody else. I wonder if Yone is going to kind of have the same effect on Lisa Vitozzi this year.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know him that well. I know he was, he's a Finnish coach. He's Finnish. He lived in Lake Placid and trained with the US team for, I want to say, 2 Olympic cycles, like close to 8 years or so. Then last year he was back with Finland, and now he's with Italy. Maybe he knows something about helping athletes keep a level head, you know? Because, I mean, Lisa's proven in the past that she can shoot. And Lowell, during his time as an athlete, has proven that he can shoot, but he would always miss on that last stage. So maybe there's something about, maybe something about Yone's coaching that he knows how to help people keep a level head. But, we also cannot rule out Julia Simon or Lisa Teresa Hauser. True. Simon with the victory in the pursuit and Hauser with the victory in the sprint, both sort of propelled them to being in the top five overall. Again, only three races, but you know, they're up there right now. So like when you look at the women's scores compared to the men's scores, it's way more tightly packed. There's not, you know, not really a, I mean, there's a front runner in Lisa Vitozzi, but I don't think she's as secure as Johannes Tingesbo is on the men's side.
I agree.
All right. Spare round. New IBU graphics. What do you think?
I like them. I really like what they added where you can see the previous checkpoints for each athlete. I think that's really cool to kind of see how the race is unfolding for that athlete and kind of just see like who, like when someone comes by, how they change all that, kind of being able to see the story of the race as at that one moment is really cool, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely took me a minute to figure out what the heck I was looking at. I was not expecting new graphics this year, but I do like that how, you know, one of my favorite things when it comes to watching a race is being like, how is this person progressing? Are they losing time? Are they gaining time? And yeah, it's maybe easier to find or to do the math in your head when you're watching like a mass start or a pursuit race. But in a sprint race, yeah, I love how you can see, okay, they left the range 15 seconds back. They're currently 10 seconds back. So they're gaining time. Or, oh, they left 15 seconds back and now they're 30 seconds back. So they just lost a ton of time. But no, I think they're really clean. I like the new design with all the shading. What I really like is the range. I really like how they show red circle on the shot that they missed, because now you know that they missed that shot. Like in the past, they would show like the red flash when they missed. But let's say you like were looking at, you know, someone at the top of the field and then you scan back down to the bottom of the list to see who's shooting at the bottom. Mm-hmm. Did they miss that shot? Did they skip that shot? Like, who knows? I like how they actually now show you like there's a red circle there in a miss.
I agree. I think it's a really cool to kind of have a better understanding of the race as a whole and being able to see it and not have to kind of think about it and question it. Like you were saying with the shooting, be able to like see it and know right then and there is really cool.
Yeah. All right, Ethan. We're one for one on biathlon podcasts for this year. We're going to take it one week at a time, one step at a time. You can listen to the podcast anywhere you find your podcast. That includes Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. You can watch us on YouTube. We have some, you know, maybe some graphics, some pictures of stuff going on this week. So yeah, share the podcast. That's the best way for you to support us is share it, hit that like button, subscribe, do all the things. But we'll see you next week.